Sunday night's twister in Lake City, uprooted trees, damaged homes, and tore the roof off the high school. This hour, a firsthand account, and we learn about cleanup. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. When the tornado struck, Rusty Farrington was huddled in a dressing room with over 100 others at the school. We'll talk with him, also the mayor of Lake City, and with Iowa State University atmospheric scientist Bill Gallus. Then, combating Iowa's brain drain. Do you know which public university's graduates are most likely to stay in the state? Join our conversation. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in the second half hour, we'll talk about Iowa's brain drain, efforts to keep Iowa graduates in Iowa, and answer this question. Do you know which of Iowa's public universities, the graduates of which are most likely to stay in the state? Would that be ISU, UNI, or the University of Iowa? We'll address that in the second half hour. Also asking for your input. Did you leave Iowa for a period of time and then return? What made you move out of the state? And what made you come back? You can answer those questions. Share your experience on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page right now or tweet us at IPR Talk. Before we get to that conversation, Sunday night's twister in Lake City, Iowa, uprooted trees, damaged homes, and tore the roof clean off a high school while 150 people were inside. Firefighters stayed up through the night, Sunday into Monday, checking on residents, clearing debris from people's yards. This is in a town of about 1,700. In just a moment, we'll talk with the mayor of Lake City. But first, to Rusty Farrington, who was in that high school when the roof was taken off. The storm literally peeled off the building's metal roof and wrapped it around a nearby tree. Rusty Farrington, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Back up to minutes before the tornado hit, what was going on in the auditorium?
We had just gone through the baccalaureate service and finished that, followed by the senior night presentation. Scholarship awards, things like that, is what they do on senior night.
Mm-hmm. And this was for?
This was for my youngest son, Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
He's the youngest, he's the last one to go through school, so, you know, there's nothing that I'm going to miss.
The tornado hit just past 7 p.m. When was the first warning of it? When over 100 people in this auditorium, in the school, when did the first warning come?
About 5 minutes before, mm-hmm. or even a little bit less. Enough time for me to pull up the radar on my phone.
And what did you see on that radar?
I saw that we were in a warning, and that the cell, which looked big and bad, was coming straight for us. We were definitely in the middle of that path. So,
right. Did officials in the high school warn as well? Did people by themselves try to find shelter, or was there some guidance there?
Oh no, they did a great job. They said everybody below the stage. We all went down into the dressing rooms, and it was very calm, very orderly.
Okay, so you're all standing there, or are you sitting, or what?
Well, there were a number of people who were in the dressing rooms themselves. They had all taken a knee, from what I understand, sort of huddled together. It was pretty cozy. And then there were probably five or six of us standing on the stairway on the way down, most of us quite a ways down the stairs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you get to the safest place in that school, all huddled together, about 150 of you. How long did it take before the tornado hit?
It was just a few minutes. We had gotten down there. Some of the folks that were on the steps have people that they know outside of Lake City, and they were all watching the radar, of course, and so beyond them communicating with those folks, they were also trying to get their families, who were not at the school, into shelter as well.
Mm-hmm. What did it sound like? Did you hear or see anything? The lights go out?
Oh, yes. The lights flickered a few times, and I figured that was probably not a good sign. And eventually they went out, and within 30 seconds or so, we had a lot of debris hitting an exterior door. No windows, just an emergency exit, but there was a lot of debris hitting it. Sort of a pressure feel and
ears popped? It.
You know, mine did not. My wife said hers did. So I think probably a number of people had that experience. It doesn't happen very easily with me.
How long did that last, the debris hitting the door, the loud sounds?
You know, it seemed like it was just a few seconds, and probably not more than 30 to 40 seconds, maybe a minute. Mm-hmm. And then it was quiet. We waited for a few minutes, and then those of us on the stairs decided it was safe to go outside, and so we went up the steps and out the emergency door. And
was it still light at this time? It struck just past 7.
Oh yeah, it was very light.
And what did you see there as far as damage?
You know, the first thing I saw was pink insulation everywhere, cotton fences, cotton in trees and other, on cars, on, you know, every place. And then you noticed the rough hanging in the tree. There were, I think, about 3 or 4 pieces of the roof, one behind the school, one in the tree, and then pieces over on the other side.
Mm-hmm. What does an experience like that leave you with as far as a feeling? You are, in fact, a trained storm spotter, but have you ever experienced anything like this?
That is my first tornado that I've actually been in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, I wasn't at any point concerned. I was more concerned about property and making sure that the proper people got warned. But otherwise, it was, you know, the school officials, again, sort of everybody was calm. There were a few rattled nerves, as you would expect there to be.
Yeah. Okay. So as far in your group, no injuries, anything like that?
No injuries at all. Everybody came out physically unscathed.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Gary Fahan is the mayor of Lake City, joining us as well. Mayor Fahan, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
No injuries?
In more ways than one.
Yes, I can understand you after the tornado that hit on Sunday night. No injuries at the high school. Any injuries in the city, in your city?
None whatsoever. Strange thing was, if it hadn't been for TV on, I'd have never known one was coming. Watched it on TV. We were prepared to go to the basement. I was standing out on my west porch, and I could see the cloud that they were talking about. Could not see an actual funnel, but I could tell there was a lot of rotation in the clouds.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, as it went out on the north side of town, I could see debris up in the air and could not imagine that it had done that much damage. It didn't make a roar like they always talk about. It was kind of like a leaf chopper working about 10 blocks away, and that's about where I was at.
Mm-hmm. You said that you wouldn't have known except for TV. Aren't there any sirens there in Lake City?
Well, oh yeah, the sirens were going off. But if you looked at the cloud formation, you couldn't imagine that it was a tornado cloud.
I see.
It was the strangest looking cloud I've ever seen to form a tornado. What came later, about 15, 20 minutes later, was a great big wall cloud with a ton of rain and wind in it. That would have scared you. But this tornado cloud was the strangest thing I've ever seen.
We heard from Rusty about the damage to the high school.
Right.
What is your assessment at this point? And it's probably still going on, or is the assessment done as far as the amount of damage?
I have not heard a report. They went out and done an assessment the day of after the tornado. No report to me yet as far as what they figure it is. They figured maybe 25% of the homes were damaged. Maybe 3 or 4 were uninhabitable. I can't believe what 600 people signed up to volunteer, and I know we had close to 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe what 1,000 people will do in one day.
Really? And you've had several days now, so you're good, well into the cleanup process?
Yeah. They the streets are clear. I'd say 95% of the lawns are clear. I mean, the volunteers went out and they actually was raking yards for people. So it's, you can't believe how the town looks compared to what it was that night. The only thing we got remaining is probably some tree stumps that are 10, 15 feet tall that you're going to have to remove those out.
Mm-hmm. I understand that you were very quick there in the town of Lake City organizing, very methodically in organizing with badges for certain people and certain houses. Yeah. What is it?
We went to the fire station that night and set up a command center. Stable Connor's in charge of it. And we worked till about 1 o'clock that night trying to get everything organized and locking the town down. And then after we got that done, the next morning we come in there at 7 o'clock in the morning, set up command center again. Volunteers start showing up, and they were issued ready tags real quick, and they went out and went to work.
Mm. Okay. It sounds like you have a lot to be grateful for there in Lake City, but also you can be proud of the response your city has and the neighboring inhabitants have.
Oh, yes. I mean, they were from 30, 40, 50 miles away. We even had a firefighter from Sioux City that was sent down. You can't believe the response. People in the East and West Coast don't realize the people we got here in the Midwest. I mean, they will go out and do anything they can to help you.
Sounds like you may have gotten choked up.
Yeah. Well, you try to think of a way to say thanks to 1,000 people, and it's hard to do.
Okay, Mayor, hold on, please. Let's talk with Bill Gallus, professor of geological and atmospheric sciences at Iowa State University. Hello, Bill, in our AIM studio.
Hi, good afternoon.
All right, I guess you may be on the phone at this point. Tell us about this tornado. We heard the firsthand accounts there. Tell us about this tornado and the storm that spawned it.
You know, Sunday was an interesting day. For several days ahead of time, we knew that it looked like a pattern that could produce lots of tornadoes and maybe some pretty strong ones. But as the day went on, most of the state stayed very cloudy, which kept it kind of cool. And we had a lot of other storms during the afternoon that came up from Missouri, and therefore the atmosphere was not able to build up as much fuel as we had expected. And I think, in fact, you know, by 5 or 6 o'clock, the National Weather Service decided to cancel the tornado watch a little bit early that was in effect for western Iowa. And I know as a storm chaser, I pretty much decided nothing was going to happen. And so, you know, the storm that hit Lake City was a bit unusual. It formed very quickly. It was, you know, passing through an area that was no longer in the tornado watch, but a tornado warning was issued. You know, they were aware the tornado was on the ground about 5 or 10 minutes before it hit Lake City. And I think that's one of the reasons why the mayor, you know, would have explained it didn't look like your normal tornado. There wasn't a whole lot of fuel in the storm to, you know, which is why the tornado did not end up any stronger. But the atmosphere had a lot of wind shear. There were strong winds throughout the atmosphere, a lot of turning of the winds. So you were able to form, you know, a fairly clean storm that actually had a tornado. And so you maybe didn't have a whole lot of rain and hail with that first storm that went through that produced the tornado.
Mm-hmm. This is classified, this one, as an EF1. That's the lowest on the scale, which gives you winds of how high?
Well, it's actually not the lowest. There is EF0, and over half of all tornadoes end up being rated EF0. With an EF1, you know, it's estimated that the winds to do the kind of damage that Lake City had were, you know, from about 86 to about 110 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. Did we get a sense of how long the funnel cloud was on the ground as a tornado?
You know, the mayor's estimate, or the man who was in the gym, I think, was probably about, you know, spot on. It probably for 30 to 45 seconds. I think it was moving maybe 30 or 40 miles an hour, and with the width of the circulation, it would probably put you in the strong winds for, you know, a little less than a minute. Mm-hmm. But a lot can happen in less than a minute.
Right. A trained spotter, according to reports, said it was a quarter mile wide as it was approaching Lake City. It's interesting in those accounts, and we've talked before several times, Bill Gallus, that this is a great example of learning that you do not go out and just watch this thing come down, because we had heard from the mayor, you don't necessarily see anything, do you?
Right. In fact, there's a lot of good video that people were able to take from of this tornado. I think there wasn't a lot of rain in the way, so you could see it from pretty far away. But yeah, it was one of these tornadoes that did not look very stable. You might be looking at one moment and you could not see any funnel cloud down to the ground. Frequently, it would break into these multiple vortices, and you might just see these very narrow tornadoes that were kind of rotating around each other. At some other times, it did appear, you know, that the cloud formed, the fog inside the tornado did form down to the ground, and it looked like a, you know, surprisingly intense tornado for how little warmth we were able to get in western Iowa on Sunday afternoon.
Now, you've studied storm damage, tornado damage in lots of sites that have been struck by severe weather. I don't know if you're planning on going out here. You study structures and so forth, and does this the damage here match up with the tornado strength here?
Right. You know, I think in some of the damage I saw in the news that night, you know, you might have thought it would have been rated even higher than EF1. But, you know, the official rules say with an EF1 tornado, you will have roofs that will be severely stripped. If you have an EF2, the guidelines say that roofs are torn off of well-constructed houses and entire frames of homes are shifted off their foundation. So, you know, I can see why this was an EF1. You know, it kind of points again to the fact that our roofs are a lot less strong than most of us think. So, you know, you see this massive roof ripped off of a high school, and it seems like, wow, that would have taken extremely strong winds. But really, 100-mile-per-hour winds, you know, can do that.
Mm-hmm. Can you say anything? What do you see when you look at this year's tornado season? We've had past tornado seasons, and when we look the past 5 or 10 years where we've had plentiful tornadoes and others when I think we had a season with barely a tornado the whole spring.
Right. You know, there's the numbers of tornadoes have been varying wildly in the last couple of years. When 2011 came, that was a really terrible year with the 300 people dying in Alabama, you know, the Joplin tornado killing 160. And when that year happened, there were so many tornadoes that people began to think, well, maybe we're into a trend where we're having more and more tornadoes. But that was followed, and really the last three springs were extremely low in the number of tornadoes. And this year was starting out that way, but kind of the end of April, things really started to ramp up. And we've been having an overly active May. In fact, again, it looks like starting tomorrow. In places like Nebraska, there may be tornadoes, and we could have tornadoes then on Saturday a little closer to Iowa and maybe even Sunday in the north or up into Minnesota. So, you know, so this spring is kind of a combination of the last few. It was incredibly quiet for a good portion of the spring, and now it's become rather active.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some studies have shown, you know, that this may be what we will expect with a changing climate is, you know, you can't say there's going to be more tornadoes or worse tornadoes or fewer or weaker. But what you can say is it's going to be a lot harder to tell. You know, you're going to have big variations from year to year, from month to month, certainly more than we were seeing, you know, several decades ago.
What is the recipe that goes into when you say it looks like things are coming in, conditions are right for more tornadoes? What is happening? What are you seeing in the atmosphere?
You need, number one, to have a lot of warmth and humidity, so that creates an unstable situation in the atmosphere. We sometimes call that the fuel for the storms, and that was what was lacking a bit on Sunday, and we can be thankful for that. You know, that's an ingredient that we tend to have an easy time having in Iowa as we get into late May and throughout the summer. The ingredient that is sometimes harder to get is wind shear, and that's having strong winds. You know, 40, 50-mile-per-hour winds as low as a mile above your head that are changing direction. And we had that in abundance on Sunday. Really, when you get those two ingredients together, then the only remaining ingredient is something to force the air to go upward. And that usually will be something like a front, a cold front or a warm front. So if you have those three ingredients, then generally you're in an atmosphere that can produce tornadoes. And last Sunday we had two of them, and the one we thought we would have, the instability, the heat and the moisture, you know, luckily we ended up a little bit on the low side for that.
Mayor Fahan of Lake City, let me go back to you. We have a couple minutes left. So the high school was destroyed. The roof is gone. I assume it's unusable. Will graduation, high school graduation, still take place?
Well, we joined school systems with the Rockwell City Litton here a year ago, and their grade school is basically what used to be their high school. So our ceremony will be in Rockwell City Sunday at the old high school there in Rockwell City. We've put classes in the Union Church, the Christian Church, the community building, the civic, the library, and the city office. That's where they're going to hold classes until the 28th.
You've had a lot of help, as you mentioned, and you're grateful for it. Any areas where you still need some help?
Not really for tornado. The only thing the government, the governor issued a proclamation that people that can't afford to do a lot of cleanup, you know, if they got a high deductible on their insurance or anything, the state will reimburse them $5,000. And I know there might be a couple, three people in that area that don't have the $5,000 to fix their property up so they can turn their bills in. So what we will probably set up is a fund within the city to raise the money to where we've got $5,000 to help those people out to where they get reimbursed and then they can pay us back. Other than that, we're doing great in town.
That's wonderful to hear. When you look back over the past few days since Sunday's tornado, what have been the biggest challenges? You've had a lot of help. 1,000 people come in and really do a great job of starting and completing some cleanup. What would you look to as the biggest challenges?
Basically, it's a kind of a first-time event. As Steve O'Connor, our coordinator, said, you know, when you haven't done this before, you wonder if you're getting everything right. And from what I saw in 2 days, they pretty much got everything right. There's a few couple things we're going to have to tweak on, but we're going to have a meeting here in a week with all the people involved, not all of them, but the main characters, and put the ideas together to where we can formulate a plan that the next time this happens, it won't be no trouble at all.
Hopefully not a next time, Mayor, right?
Well, right.
always have to be ready, though.
Yep. We went through this situation in 2000. We had a wind come out of the north. I mean, a front that was covered the whole city and it took a lot of trees down. We had a tornado that hit town in 57, and it done a lot of damage. But that's back in the days when you didn't have these emergency coordinators put together.
Rusty Farrington, you started off with a firsthand account of being in that high school. I hope you're still there.
Yeah.
This will be a lasting memory for you. Anything that didn't get mentioned that you will keep in your memory?
Well, this is something that you'll never forget. But I would like to say credit to the school officials, credit to the community. Planning and training saves lives. And it was proof positive on Sunday night. And so I think the mayor is dead on. You take what you can learn from this and make a better plan and keep the training up and things go well for you.
Rusty Farrington, thank you for telling us about your experience last Sunday. We're glad you and all the others who were in Lake City at the time of the tornado are safe and that you responded so well. Rusty Farrington was in the high school where the storm peeled off the building's metal roof, wrapped it around a new nearby tree, broke it into different pieces. Mayor Gary Fahan of Lake City, thank you for your assessment of the damage and the great cleanup efforts. Bill Gallas, professor of geological atmospheric sciences at Iowa State University, thank you for your expertise as well, Bill.
No problem.
When we come back, we'll talk about efforts to keep Iowa's graduates in Iowa, combating Iowa's brain drain. When we come back, it's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This half hour, we want to take a look at Iowa's brain drain, the flight of young, well-educated women and men from our state, something that raises plenty of concerns about the health and the future of our state's economy. But how bad is our state's brain drain? What can be done about it? Of the students that graduate from Iowa's colleges and universities, how many of them stay here after graduation? Well, a new investigation from the Iowa Center for Investigative Journalism finds it varies depending on the school, depending on whether you graduated from UNI, the University of Iowa, or Iowa State University. University of Northern Iowa grads are most likely to stick around. University of Iowa grads most likely to leave the state, at least for some time. Joining me to talk about this, Danielle Ferguson, an Iowa State University student, not a native Iowan, from South Dakota, a junior who took part in this investigation for Iowa Watch, interviewed students about whether or not they had intentions to leave the state. Danielle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi. So your role in producing this story was what? What did you do?
Well, yeah, like you said, I went and talked to a few graduating seniors about their post-graduation plans and whether or not they were staying and why they were leaving.
Mm-hmm. And what did you find? Tell me some of the stories, individuals' stories.
Yeah, so I talked to three people, two of them native Iowans, one from Chicago, and all three of them said they planned on leaving the state initially. Two of them, the two native Iowans, said they would love to come back eventually after, you know, kind of trying out new areas and trying new adventures, they said. But they felt they wanted to kind of get out a little bit first, experience some new things before coming back and settling down because they said they loved growing up in Iowa. They were both engineers. They said they just wanted a different engineering experience than what was typical around here. And then the student from Chicago said she her field was environmental studies and environmental science, and she wanted to travel more so than just settle down.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, our Facebook page is getting some feedback here. We asked the question, and we invite you to our Facebook page asking you this hour, did you leave Iowa and then return? What made you move out of the state? What made you come back? Nick writes on our Facebook page, I left Iowa as a new engineering grad from Iowa State and lived in St. Louis and Clearwater, Florida. It was fun, but I came back to Iowa to raise my family. It is much better to raise kids in Iowa than those other places. We enjoyed Iowa enough that we may retire in Iowa City, although Colorado, writes Nick, is a very close second. So this is something, in the very few interviews that you found, this is a recurring theme, isn't it, Danielle?
Yes, definitely. I mean, even from the seniors who are my friends who I talked to, they said they kind of want to leave for a little bit, but then they'd love to come back to settle down.
Mm-hmm. You're here from growing up in South Dakota, is that right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. What lured you here?
Kind of the same story with me, too. I just wanted to get a little farther away from home and try something a little different, but not be too far away from home. And I loved my experience at Iowa State so
mm-hmm.
far.
Mm-hmm. What are the chances that we get to keep you around, Danielle, in the state?
That's a good question. It kind of just
You're a junior, right?
Yep. Yeah, I just finished up my junior year, so I guess it depends on where I can find a job.
Okay. Okay. To be determined yet, Danielle Ferguson, to stay on the line with us. Angie McKee is with us. She's Senior Director of Operations at the University of Iowa Pomerantz Career Center, sitting in the Iowa City studio with me. Welcome, Angie.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We're hearing a few of the narratives collected by Danielle. Also, on our Facebook page, we're seeing that. I'm seeing you're smiling. It's a recognition there. Anything else to tell us about why students leave Iowa? The University of Iowa, which you represent, is the public university with the highest proportion-wise number of students that leave the state.
That's true. I think that some of those stories are certainly representative of the masses, of the number of students that we graduate from the University of Iowa and certainly from Iowa State and you and I as well. I think it's important to keep in mind when you're thinking about the number of graduates that leave the state, what is the makeup of that graduating class? How many of them came from Iowa originally? How mm-hmm. many came from out of state and or even internationally? And that's going to vary between the three institutions quite a bit because they are different institutions. So University of Iowa does have that lowest number, which I think right now is just over 50%, 50.7 or something percent.
Of in-state students.
That's just of overall all graduates that stay in the state of Iowa. If you look specifically at the number of Iowa residents that graduate and are employed, just over 70% of them stay in the state of Iowa. So that's a little bit different number. Mm-hmm. But overall, when we look at all of our graduates from the 13-14 class, that number was just over 50%. And, you know, each individual is so specific on what they're looking
sure.
for in their career opportunities.
Yeah, right. But you can see trends. You analyze these things. And the big things for leaving are why? What have you tracked there?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of them when we are doing our specific tracking, it's more specific to where are they employed, are they going on to graduate school, those kinds of things, a few of the things that they participated in while they were in college. Anecdotally, just like you've been pointing out, we know that a lot of grads seem to come back to the state later for some of the points that you mentioned from your Facebook participants and things like that. And I think, you know, we don't have any actual studies on why specifically they've left the state. What we hear, though, is it's specific. It's for, you know, it's the opportunity. Especially a lot of our Illinois students are anxious to get home. You know, a lot of them come from the Chicago suburbs, and it's hard to compete with some of those things that they think they're wanting in that kind of an environment.
Angie McKee, at your University of Iowa Pomerantz Career Center, you have an initiative called Consider Iowa. What is that?
Well, Consider Iowa is a program, and the main goal of that program is to basically help University of Iowa students know about the career opportunities in the state of Iowa. And through that program, we've been able to do a variety of things over the years, and those things have changed. We have done some immersion trips in the corridor area between Iowa City, Cedar Rapids.
What's an immersion trip?
Well, what that is it's a day-long trip that where we might choose an industry or a cluster of industries and recruit students or invite students to participate and go along for the day to visit three or four different employers to know more what it's like to work in marketing and PR in the state of Iowa, or to work on a college campus, or to work in event planning, or we've gotten into the insurance industries as well. So that's some of the things that we've done in the past. We've done luncheons across the state to engage employers, and now our efforts are a little bit more one-to-one with employers, and then we've been hosting some networking receptions as well.
How do you measure success? I imagine that's fairly difficult.
It is fairly difficult. I mentioned that we do a post-graduation survey asking about employment, and at this point, because the relationship you start with an employer continues, by the time you get hired, you might have met them at a career fair, and then you applied to a position and did an interview. It's very hard to track, but anecdotally, you know, people do like coming to the receptions. It may be their first exposure to talking to an employer from Iowa, things like that.
We have a tweet from Drake University. We left them out so far. Want to include them, of course. 77% of this year's entering class, tweets Drake, came from outside Iowa, 77%. And Drake says, we consistently see over 55% of our graduates stay in Iowa. So
that's wonderful.
That's a very good thing. So the idea with a program like Consider Iowa is, you know, for a student who may not have considered it, exactly as the name, to raise awareness. Of course, it's anybody's decision where they end up with their career, but take them outside the campus area to other places in the state and say, this is the career and the life that you might have.
Exactly. We want to expose them, whether it be taking them to an employer site or inviting employers to campus and hosting reception or things like that, basically just to open their eyes to what it might be like to be, especially if we can connect them with young professionals, what it might be like to be a young professional in the state of Iowa and the kind of opportunities both for your career and for your personal life. That work-life balance we know is very important to new grads, and it's important for them to hear directly from other young professionals in the state.
Ryan tweets us, we moved to D.C. after Iowa law graduation, moved back to start a family. We love it here. And let's see, Angie, another Angie, this one on our Facebook page, listening. I left Iowa and headed to Minneapolis after graduating from the University of Iowa due to a job offer. I came back to Iowa when it came time to raise my children, and I've been here for over 20 years. So this is really a strong selling point. Families. It's a great place to raise a family for a variety of reasons, Angie. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think that we hear that story quite a bit. You know, whether you work in a career center or you don't, you hear that story a lot. It's a great place to raise a family. The cost of living is, you know, very manageable. You can get involved with a lot of things. It's accessible. Things are accessible. You know, your short commute times, all of those things factor in, and they become higher on your value list, I think, as you get out of college a few years down the road, when you're getting to that point in your life when you might be ready to buy a home or start a family, some of those things.
Angie McKee is with the University of Iowa Pomerantz Career Center. Danielle Ferguson joining us by phone, a student at Iowa State University, part of producing an investigation that looked at why students in Iowa's colleges and universities leave the state when they do. Danny Laudick is with us as well, Talent Solutions Director for the Greater Cedar Valley Alliance and Chamber. Danny Laudick, I see in my notes, you grew up in my hometown in Cedar Falls. Hello.
I did.
Very good. You work on making the Cedar Valley attractive for young professionals. How?
A lot of it comes down to, number one, the sense of place. A lot of people, when they're looking for a place that they want to live and grow up in and stay in after they graduate, it's what about that community attaches them to it? What do they see there that they associate themselves with? So when they're looking for a place to stay or a place to go for their job, are they leaving more than just the geographic location? Are they leaving the community that they're a part of? So it's giving them that sense of place that they can feel like they're a part of and that they've influenced.
Mm-hmm. And you run into this, what I'll call a boomerang effect, Native Iowans boomeranging themselves out of the state to the rest of the country or around the world and then coming back?
Sam, because we've been looking at that, where is it just a matter of keeping the ones here, or we have companies as well who, you know, they see these people who have left the state, but they're coming back with experience from other companies, from other states, from other regions outside of here, from other countries, and that's good knowledge and experience that they want them to bring back to their companies. So a lot of it comes down to not just what are we doing to help make sure this is the kind of community people want to stay in, but for those people that grew up here and leave, and even people that are looking for a place to settle down that haven't come from here, how do we make sure they know about what Iowa has available, what we can offer, and that this is a place that they can call home afterwards?
And what is the answer to that question that you have found in your years of work?
A lot of it, we've been looking at ways that we can partner with our state institutions, with you and I, with Wartburg here we also have in the region, as well as with Iowa and Iowa State, for those alumni groups that they have, that they're looking at where their students are going, and they keep in touch with them through their alumni associations. And what can we do to partner with them to make sure that those people that move away, they know of the opportunities, they can see them when they're looking at, well, okay, now we're looking at starting a family, where do we go? We should have that presence of mind that Iowa is a place to consider.
Mm-hmm. Scott's writing on our Facebook page, I was recruited to Iowa from out of state to work as an engineer in 2007. I plan to stay for a few more years at least, but there's no place like home. Michigan is Scott's home. We can certainly understand the sense of home there. Scott continues to write, there aren't many options in the Cedar Rapids area for engineering besides the big one. I guess that big one he's referring to, Rockwell Collins, would be that one. So in the Cedar Valley, name some companies that you put out there to attract Iowans to stay around.
Well, and the one that just comes to mind for most people is John Deere. They have a lot of manufacturing facilities here, engineering for their product engineering center. But there's a lot of those mid and small-sized companies that are either suppliers or completely outside of the agricultural supply chain. GMT, TDS Automation, Gaither Manufacturing Machining, Hypro. I mean, there's so many out there, plus the information technology sector that's available between Banno, ProfitStars. We also have Phantom EFX. Couple of other, that's a game design company that does some casino games. And we also, there's just an amazing amount of these smaller and mid-sized companies that people may not have heard of. And a lot of it comes down to, how do we make sure people know about those companies? How are we connecting them with those opportunities? Because a lot of it is they haven't heard of them. We asked a panel of interns to name three companies in the region, and none of them, there was about five people, and none of them were able to name three companies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's just, even growing up here, by the time I graduated, I still didn't have a good grasp of all the companies available, where I could work, what opportunities there were. So a lot of it comes down to, what are we doing to help connect people to these? Is it between internships, job shadow opportunities, giving bus tours of some of the companies in the region?
Mm-hmm. Gene is listening and emailed us and asks this question. We have a son and a daughter in law trying to come back to Iowa from Washington, D.C. Finding employment is a challenge for young professionals. Is there a networking solution for helping potential returnees connect with potential employers? Angie, do you have an idea there, or is this more one for Danny?
Well, initially, I would say that to make sure that they're being active on LinkedIn and looking at some of those professional groups that in the area that you hope to move to. They can connect with their former college career services, their former law school career services, about resources that might be available there. Or, as Danny was pointing out, working with different alumni groups, you know, getting in contact with some of the alumni groups in the state of Iowa and things like that. Law interviews are starting to pick up for new graduates, so that's something to be very hopeful about, too.
Mm-hmm. Are there fields that are very different when it comes to attracting students to, say, in Iowa? What it would say the best fields? Do you have any sense of that, Angie?
You know, I really don't. I would say kind of on the converse of that, you know, the students do know based on their major. Sometimes, you know, I'm thinking of some very specific ones where you get into like the cinema and things like that, where it may be a little bit more challenging to find a career opportunity in the state of Iowa, where you may have to be, you know, more creative about networking strategically and finding opportunities or even making your own opportunities. So sometimes it's a little bit more challenging for some areas, but we have such a wide representation of opportunities in the state. Sometimes I think it's helping students know about those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Danny Laudick, you were part of a panel of Cedar Valley career advancement experts, I believe, on Tuesday of this week.
Mm-hmm.
So what were you looking for to be in that panel? Were you giving out information, trying to raise awareness, or were you trying to also tap into some knowledge, some experiences that would answer some of your questions?
It was a little bit of both. It was kind of a learning experience. Anytime we have a chance to sit down and really talk about some of the issues, there's an amazing amount that comes out of that shared conversation, especially when we can engage with the audience. But as well, it was kind of talking about a lot of the things that we're doing. So it's trying to, because this is an evolving issue. People, different generations are always looking for different things. And the one thing we've done is we brought together all of the young professional organizations. We have a couple in the area between the JCs, Rotary Clubs, Cedar Valley Young Professionals. We brought them together for an event at the Hearst Center for the Arts. It was kind of a shared, all the groups have a chance to get up, talk about what they're doing for a few minutes. Food and wine was provided, and we had probably 10 to 12 new people there who weren't part of any of the organizations, and they were able to find out about the other groups. But for that panel, a lot of it was discussing the issues. There's a lot of different viewpoints. We had a young professional who was still in school talk about what his family did, his brother moving away, the lack of cultural diversity that they were looking for, and that was, which is one of the reasons they moved away. And then we also had someone who works at a staffing firm talk about some of the things he's seen in the employment industry. And so it was really a good chance to sit down and see some of the different viewpoints and talk as a community. What is it we're missing? What do we need mm-hmm. to work on?
Right, right. You mentioned diversity there. It's interesting, too, the work now a couple decades back of Richard Florida, for instance. And generations ago, Danny and Angie and Daniela would have been what? That you went to where the jobs were. And now we've had this, I guess it's a great trend where you say, where do I want to live? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are in that position, right, Danny? They say, I'll find a job. That's the second tier thing. But where do I want to live? And then I'll find a job in my field, right?
Yeah. A lot of people are looking for that sense of place. They want a place that they can associate themselves with, that they feel is open to other people of different cultures, of different beliefs, that they can really consider themselves a part of. They don't just want a geographical location. They're looking for a community, a place that, you know, kind of represents what they believe in and that they can feel themselves a part of and proud to call themselves there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the people they don't want to settle on the place. They want to choose to live in the place.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we make our communities the type of place that people choose to want to live?
And when you say diversity as a selling point there, what is meant by that? Not, it's more than just having a great number of ethnic restaurants to go to, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. It really comes down to the openness. What is there in the community that brings people together? What's the interaction like? Are you out there seeing people from different communities, their cultures, the impact on the community? Is it a visible part of the community? Are people accepting of them? You know, how does it interrelate with the working aspect of the employment opportunities? So I think people want to see a community that openly cares about others in the community and that they're looking for ways to bring people together and kind of looking forward to how do we continue to build our community.
Danielle Ferguson, we haven't been to you for a few minutes there. You're the student at Iowa State University, native of South Dakota, junior, looking at your career prospects here and being part of this investigation, looking at why there is a flight of young, well-educated women and men from our state. Being involved in this, researching and interviewing other young people like yourself, has this changed your perception, your view of what you want to do in your life and where you want to be, giving you a different perspective at least, if not decided where you want to be?
I guess it kind of made me realize that I sort of fall into the same boat and didn't even know it. I mean, I was born in Los Angeles, but I was glad to have grown up in a smaller Midwestern community, and I could definitely see myself going back to California for a little bit, but then I would love to come back to either South Dakota or Iowa because I do like that that Midwestern community feel, and there are some cities growing in, you know, the Midwestern area like Des Moines and Sioux Falls and things like that. So I guess it just kind of made me realize that A lot of other people are kind of thinking the same thing I am.
Mm-hmm. Angie McKee, finally here, we wanted to, awareness raising is a big thing here. What about misperceptions? Are there misperceptions out there about living and working in Iowa that you find yourself battling against?
Well, I think there definitely is, you know, and some of the things that we've talked about as being great about Iowa, the cost of living and accessibility and great for families are not necessarily things that are top on the radar for a new college grad. So some of the things that are, you know, is that work-life balance and being able to have things to do in their personal life in addition to, you know, growth opportunities and professional development in their professional life, you know, are equally as important to them. It's not just the job, it's what's the whole package look like, essentially.
Okay. Thank you very much for giving us an overview, Angie McKee. She is the Senior Director of Operations at the University of Iowa Pomerantz Career Center. Thanks for coming in, Angie. And Danny Laudick, thank you for coming into our Cedar Falls studio. Talent Solutions Director for the Greater Cedar Valley Alliance and Chamber. Thank you for coming in, and thank you for kicking it off. Danielle Ferguson, junior at Iowa State University. Good luck with your career and your life, wherever you may spend it.
Well, thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Also thanks to Julia Davis. Catherine Perkins is our executive director. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.